Welcome to the Alien Wellness Think Tank podcast series. The Think Tank is an emergency medicine organization led by residents for residents to improve the culture of wellness during residency training. Take a listen to our conversations with our wellness strategists and mentors.
So hello, everyone. This is AK coming to you with the Wellness Think Tank. We are so excited about our hangouts because we have Shahina Braganza with us, coming from Queensland, Australia, Gold Coast Hospital. She is a senior emergency medicine doctor there. Previously was a director of clinical training, which supported hospital-wide junior doctors. She's very passionate about non-technical skills. She actually stressed anything tech-related is not her bag. So non-technical skills in medicine, she particularly has an interest in professionalism, communication, and emotional situational awareness. She stated before that she feels pretty strongly that focusing on these attributes can be sharpened in all physicians in their training, both junior and senior alike. Her portfolio in the emergency department includes contributions to interprofessional education, emergency mental health service liaison, various commitments with the Australasian College of Emergency Medicine. She's the founder of the One ED Wellness Project and a founding member of RAPEM.org. If you want to learn more about her, she's very fancy, especially for not being tech. She has her own website, ShahinaBraganza.com. So we have two of our resident members of our wellness think tank, which is pretty excited because the whole reason why we do these Google Hangouts is really for the community and residents and getting a conversation out there. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
I'm Adrienne Tarrin. I'm a PGY1 at University of Oklahoma.
Hi, I'm Alicia Gendy. I'm one of the chief EM residents at the University of Iowa.
Fantastic. So Shahina and her passion and expertise is in a lot of these non-technical skills in medicine. And we talked about some of the areas of interest that she can cover. It's a pretty broad area. There's emotional, contagions, standards and expectations, how we approach wellness in the ED. So Matt put together, which, by the way, Matt, our usual Google Hangouts fearless leader, couldn't make it tonight, but he did all the work for me. So I have my questions right here that Matt put together. And I'll start with some of these. And Shahina, just chime in. And ladies, please, if you are able to share any thoughts of these experiences, please do. So what do you mean by collective wellness? And what are some of the simple things we can do in the ED to promote it?
I guess when I talk about collective wellness, it's a reflection on the fact that when we think about wellness, we typically think about, you know, our individual wellness, whether that's our physical wellness or our emotional wellness or even our social wellness. But over the past few years, I've been exploring that idea that we could actually perhaps explore this in a team or a group level. And that is really the basis of the One ED program that we founded. The modest aim of the program is really to simply normalize the conversation around wellness, because there still exists such a strong stigma around wellness in the general community. And I think that's amplified in the medical profession, because if we start to expose our vulnerabilities or imperfections or the fact that we're having trouble, we feel like the response might be, well, perhaps you're not cut out for this. I think because of that, it's important for us to out all of those issues, to give permission to each other, not only to discuss wellness, but to talk about the times that they're struggling. I guess that's what I mean by a collective sense of wellness and openness around it and the willingness to actually have a conversation about it.
So what brought you to the world of wellness? Was there anything that you experienced or anything that you witnessed that you said, you know what, I have to do this?
Yeah, that's a good question, AK. For a long time, I've been saying that what triggered this journey was my own experience of a version of burnout back in 2002, when I was a second year emergency medicine trainee. But I was reflecting upon this again the other day, and I'd like to think that even if I hadn't had that experience, I would have been compelled to promote this conversation And in fact, I think more than the burnout experience, I think it's the fact that I feel that I live a very privileged life for which I am grateful. And I feel that I probably have some strengths in terms of my emotional and social wellness. And therefore, I feel that it's incumbent upon those of us that are strong within our communities to actually lead the conversation. Because I think wellness is not about helping those who are struggling. You know, this is not for the people that are at the bottom of our ranks in terms of wellness. This is for all of us. And I would love for this to become just, you know, business as usual, that we have these conversations.
I'm right there with you, especially on the vulnerability aspect of things. I always say if there's anything I could change, it would be to make the medical culture one that embraces vulnerability instead of the current culture that we tend to perpetuate for one another. In terms of leadership, you were saying, you know, things that for those of us who are leaders in the arena, what we can bring to the field. What if you don't have a true designated leadership position? So Alicia, she's a chief, so she has a good role as far as leadership. Adrian, you said you were PGY one or two?
One.
So you're PGY one. So what are some of the things for those of us who maybe don't have titles or aren't leaders? What can we do to promote this collective wellness?
So one of the first things I'd say is that you don't need a title to be a leader. And even Alicia, you as a PGY1, you've almost certainly experienced situations where you've been in an environment or a scenario and you've had to step up to some kind of leadership. And this might be something in the clinical context where you've perhaps had to take charge of the care of a patient, even if it's for a small aspect of their care. Or it may be in the context of the social situation, whether at work or elsewhere. And I think it's important to recognize that wherever we are in the pecking order, we have the opportunity to just model certain behaviors, model standards, model integrity even, to those around us. So I'd strongly encourage people to not underestimate their potential to exert leadership.
The one thing that I really loved in our email conversations was the emotional contagion you were speaking of, because I really feel that occurs. Do you want to talk about that whole process and what it is and what it is that we're feeling and how we can kind of promote wellness through a good emotional contagion?
Yeah, sure. So this year, I've been a doctor for 22 years. And so over that time, I guess my thoughts on this are based on my experience, my observations of myself, but also of other people. And I think in a nutshell, what this refers to is the fact that one person's emotional state can strongly influence the emotional state of the people around them. So an example of this that perhaps we can all relate to is those days where you really don't want to go to work for whatever reason. You're tired from all the shifts leading up to today, or you're tired because of stuff that's happening on the home front, or you're just not in the mood for it, or there's been a conflict at work that, you know, you're just feeling a little bit conflict avoidant about. And I certainly have those days, particularly on an evening shift, when I kind of trudge in there with my heart in my hands, and it feels like I would rather be anywhere else but there. My advice in that scenario would be, in the interest of self-care, you should actually stay home if you can. But if you don't have the option to stay home, then you need to show up and you need to fake it. You need to fake being happy. You need to pretend that there's no place you'd rather be. Because I truly believe that what happens then is that you almost inadvertently just elevate, you know, that little mood aura around you, and that actually has a positive effect on the people around you, whether they've arrived happy or whether they've arrived a little bit deflated as well. I think by that process of emotional contagion, if you're upbeat, your glass is half full, people just innately feed off that. And then the added bonus is that they then start to reflect that positivity back to you. And before you know it, you're actually okay about being there. And I think the reverse is true as well, that, again, we've probably all at least experienced that scenario where someone's been in our midst who feels like they're really sapping us off their energy. And sometimes we anticipate this. I've been on rotations where I've had a senior doctor or even a colleague who just arrives as if the weight of the world is on their shoulders. Or, you know, it's apparent that they're having some stresses to contend with as well. And while, you know, I'm wholly compassionate about that, it's easy to observe how, again, that negativity can be contagious as well. And so I think that it's important for us to develop the self-awareness and to be able to acknowledge our feelings, but then to separate how we feel from how we behave, because one doesn't have to directly translate to the other. And if you can just modulate your actual behaviors, I think it can then in turn feed back to how you feel. And that's then for the good of yourself, but also for the good of your team, and ultimately for the good of the patient.
Fantastic. Are you familiar with mindset interventions? Any of you guys? Yeah, Adrian, you did. So it's really interesting. I read Carol Dweck's book, Mindset, and it's pretty remarkable what we can convince ourselves to do if we just believe that we can do it. You know, my world to wellness came in after a pretty bad episode of burnout in 2016. You know, I'm a fairly early faculty. I've been out for 8 years, but I stopped to, you know, get married and pop a few kids out and all that jazz that I didn't do during training. And I tried to take on the whole world of academics all at once, and I totally fried. And the good of that was that I'd opened my eyes to the whole world of wellness and mindfulness and being self-aware. But I also started reading books. And in Carol Dweck's book, it talked about that if you tell yourself you can do this, you can. And I actually find myself, you know, yesterday, perfect example yesterday, some guy went like road rage on me and tried to like do a battle with me in the middle of the highway because I don't know, I wouldn't let him cut me off. And when I came into work, I was pretty emotional about that and kind of upset. I wasn't in a good mood. It was a 5 p.m. shift, but I told myself, you know, I'm going to make a difference, a positive impact in one person's life today. And regardless of how grumpy I am, I'm going to turn my whole mood around and everything's going to be fine. And I found as I was saying that, I started joking around with people. I was joking around with my patients. And I really do believe 100% when you're talking about this emotional contagion, I've never heard of it being phrased like that. And I love it because it's so true. Whether it's a good emotion or a negative emotion, it will spread like wildfire within the department. Have you ever experienced anything like that?
If I may share, like I just had this probably a couple weeks ago and I kind of came up with this analogy and like image in my head that I'm kind of in love with. I also enjoy this emotional contagion. I came to shift and being the senior resident, leading the team, there was an off-service intern and an EM intern and got there and it was like palpable. My attending was in the worst mood, very slow to talk, very sighing, carrying the weight of the world. And I was like, man, you know, we just got here and I don't want myself to be affected. I don't want these junior residents to be affected by this thunderstorm. And I thought to myself, you know what? Like, I'm not flying through your cloud. Your cloud is being dissipated by my sunshine. And I just kind of continued to like, I'm going to be myself and I'm going to bring sunshine. And everything kind of changed over like less than 30 minutes. Like his mood was elevated. The team was fine. We ended up having a great joking shift. We got candy at the end, like all of these things. So I'm very glad that we're talking about that. Like, and I love that emotional contagion because it really, it's so true. And I think that that's a, like a non-formal leadership thing that us as physicians and leaders of the EM team, whether it's in residency or with nursing and respiratory therapy and, you know, your EMS providers, I think that's something that we can definitely impact others.
Definitely.
Alicia, I love that story. I think you should get some scrubs embroidered with "My sunshine eats your thundercloud for breakfast."
I agree. At least a pair of socks. at minimum, a pair of socks. Adrian, what about you? Have you been in any kind of situations like that where you've kind of palpated? I don't know. I kept calling myself a curmudgeon yesterday. I was like, oh, I just feel like such a curmudgeon.
It's definitely a situation. I mean, I haven't come up with quite so eloquent an analogy, but I feel like that's especially true for a lot of us on off-service rotations where, you know, it's kind of easy to get sucked into. You may just may not be the favorite place to be, but, you know, I always, when I think about when you brought up the mindset stuff, I read Kelly McGonigal's book, The Upside of Stress, probably about a year ago, which I think does a fantastic way of kind of spinning that mindset stuff into just like reframing even stress, which is often really high during a shift or, you know, and it's easy to let that affect you and make it kind of a downward spiral. Changing the whole mindset around that, I think, is something that we could all focus on.
I love that book.
Yeah.
That book is fantastic. Kelly McGonigal's The Upside of Stress is in my book of my game changers. Rob Cooney, he's also with the Faculty Incubator. He and I are always kind of going back and forth about these game-changing books. And in my mind, in terms of just stress and mindsets and interventions and wellness, The Upside of Stress is fantastic. What do you want to talk about, Shahina? We don't have to have all these formal questions. The things that, you know, what's in your bag, your wheelhouse of expertise that you want to bestow upon us?
I could tell you about the 1ED Wellness Project.
Perfect.
So this is a project that we started actually exactly 2 years ago. And basically, a small group of us decided that we'd like to tackle wellness head on within our department. It was one of our, we'll call them residents, but he was a PGY3, who actually approached me and said, do you think that there might be an appetite for this thing called mindfulness within our emergency department? And at the time, I didn't really know what mindfulness was in a formal sense. But we went and explored it together. We attended a two-day course. And then we came back and we, you know, our heads were full of these ideas about the kinds of things that we could do at work. But we weren't quite sure how to get started. And then eventually we kind of just bit the bullet and started with a few things. So the three things that we are still doing now, about 18 months after we launched the program, is that once a week at our medical handover, which is 7:30 in the morning, we pause for just 4 minutes. And someone asked me recently, why is it 4 minutes? And there's completely no science behind why it's 4 minutes. It's a bit less than five, a bit more than three. But we pause for 4 minutes. And the whole aim is simply to just stop and reflect upon the fact that what we do is, you know, it's high end, it's high stakes, it has potentially high emotional toll on each of us. And yet we kind of trudge along day after day, and things that are actually quite abnormal and quite surreal become normal for us. And I think they kind of have this cumulative emotional burden and even emotional compassion fatigue that piles up for us. Anyway, the point of the 4 minute pause is simply to stop and reflect upon that. And what we do in that time, it depends on who's there to lead. But we either show a short video that's on a wellness-related theme or maybe some concepts around mindfulness. Or whoever's in the room might just share a very casual commentary on the kinds of strategies that they might employ at work just to get them through a shift. And then we usually end that pause with a 90-second sit, which is a guided meditation. So we do that at both of our campuses. And I'm really pleased to add at this point that our nursing staff have taken this on as well. So a few times a week before the start of their shift, they stop for a few minutes to at least do the guided sit, if nothing else. We've also posted a number of flyers around the place. So we have one next to our blood gas machines that basically invites our staff to take that opportunity, you know, while you're waiting for the blood gas to analyze, rather than to race ahead to the next thing or mull over the conflict that you might have just had with one of the inpatient registrars, to actually just stop for a moment and to recognize the here and now. And the point of that is that it's said that about 95% of our time we live in unconsciousness. And that's not unconsciousness as you and I would understand it, but just the sense that we're on autopilot. We're either living in the past or we're living in the future. So the flyers really just ask people to pause, even if it's, again, for even 20 seconds, and to just notice that you're breathing. And the hope there is that you might just reset, reboot your hard drive, in a sense, before you go on. And the third thing we do is that on a Monday lunchtime, we have a 30-minute session where people who are free and interested can pop in, and we do a few other activities as well. So this is kind of the structure of our activity. But in actual fact, I think the value of our program is not so much in the specifics of what we do, but just the fact that we do something. Because I think what that achieves is that it makes a statement that this is stuff that's important to us. We get what it's like to be who we are and to do what we do, and that we acknowledge it and we're open to talking about it. And that's our program in a nutshell. I can give you some more detail and talk about why we chose mindfulness per se, but that's really it in a nutshell.
I guess, what was the energy and what was the vibe in the department? You know, because every department you have your, it's a salt and pepper shaker, right? There's certain people who are like, oh yeah, that's great. Let's try it. I think this would be great. There's other people who are like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. I'm never going to participate. And there are other people that are kind of like, whatever, I'm going to come in and work. If you guys want me to do these things, I'll do them. I don't like it. I don't dislike it. How did you change or get the culture of your department to kind of be open to something like this? And did you have any, I guess, difficulty with the administrative leadership about kind of taking these moments and these times and, you know, affecting the metrics that everybody's looking at, right? Patient flows and satisfaction and all these things. How was all of that?
It's interesting because when we first started entertaining the idea, some of us thought that maybe we should approach this at a hospital-wide level and that we should speak to our human resources department because, A, this is kind of their area of expertise, and B, we thought that the benefit might, you know, extend to all staff members. And I guess somewhat predictably, they were really keen and enthusiastic about the idea, but not really in a position at the time to commit any resources to it. And so what we did was that we kind of narrowed our sphere of concern to the emergency department. So the environment with which we were familiar and where we had some social capital. Our other two advantages were, A, we have phenomenal leadership, and my medical director in particular is, I'd actually describe him as being a visionary. But not only is he forward-thinking, but he's incredibly enabling of his staff. And I've been there since 2002 as a second-year trainee. And my experience of him has been, whatever idea you come up with, if it's got half a chance of being successful, or even if it doesn't, he'll kind of enable you to at least give it a try. And that was a massive advantage. The other advantage we had was that the baseline culture at our emergency department was already fairly strong. I'd like to think that we enjoy, you know, a particularly cohesive team spirit, and therefore we were starting with a strong baseline. Having said that, of course, there were people who were skeptical about the whole project. There were very understandable questions and concerns like, well, Shahina, you know, why are you doing this? Is there something wrong? Is there something we need to fix? And how are you going to measure that? And you know, I think that's incredibly valid. And then there were other bits of feedback like, you know, this feels a little bit cultish to me. It feels like some kind of religious takeover. What was surprising was that the proportion of people who felt like that, or at least who expressed those sentiments, was surprisingly small. And again, I'd like to think that the time was right. You know, we are talking about wellness and struggle and burnout a lot more than we were talking about it even 3 or 4 years ago. And over the last 2 years, again, based on the feedback that's given to me, and maybe people are just being kind to me, but there are a lot of people who started off kind of skeptical, but now appreciate that the spirit of this is to enhance the wellness for everyone. If we're fixing problems, that's great. But the agenda here was not to fix problems. The agenda was really just to normalize the conversation and to make it explicit that this was a priority for our department. In terms of how do we measure it, in the administrative flavor, you know, can we change or improve our performance? We've given this some thought, and we have actually just published a paper in our national journal, which outlines some of the gains. But I must admit that it's very difficult to meaningfully measure gains from a program like this. I think, and that's for a number of reasons. I think the main one is that at any given time, if you were to try and measure data before and after an intervention, there is so much that confounds that data. At a group level, an environmental factor, like the fact that we've got our winter surge coming up, or you know, we might have seen a slate of traumatic cases, or whether stuff's going on personally for the subjects that you might study. And I'm sure that there are clever people that can help us to mitigate against all those confounders. And perhaps once I've recovered from the arduous task of having written this first manuscript, I'll try and do some more rigorous study around the benefits of a program like this.
That's great. I mean, that program sounds fantastic. Getting buy-in is probably one of the hardest things to do, yet one of the most important things to do when you're trying to establish any kind of change within a department. And I agree with you, you know, publishing about wellness and wellness interventions and this whole world that we're all entering or have been in, it's difficult to do because there's a lot of individual aspects to this. So I think it's great that you have a paper out on it. I'm actually going to read it.
I should acknowledge Michelle. It was Michelle Lin exactly this time, perhaps maybe to the day. I was in Stanford to talk at MedX, and I realized that Michelle Lin was very close by, and she very generously agreed to meet with me and my family. And I vividly remember being in Pete's Cafe in San Francisco, and she said, "You should write that up." And I felt pretty sheepish and kind of imposter-like, because although we'd kind of done some evaluation around the program, it really didn't feel like it was robust enough for sharing, let alone writing up a manuscript. And it took me, 8 months? And it took the help of a lot of other people like Victoria Brazel and one of my colleagues, Gerben Kaisers. But eventually that manuscript saw the light of day. And it's far from excellent, but it's a starting point.
Stop it. Give yourself credit. You did a nice job. You got it published, and that's what counts.
Yeah, it's okay. I embrace my imperfection with pride. It's like it's like my signature.
Yes. I mean, don't worry. I have pretty bad imposter syndrome too, so I get it.
And you know what, AK? The irony is, firstly, I must say that this program I'm probably making it sound complex and sophisticated, but it is actually ridiculously simple. And I think the beauty of the program is that it is ridiculously simple. And certainly if you do explore any of it, you know, if there's any materials or resources that you think might be useful where you work, to me, this is public domain stuff. This is built for sharing. So please let me know.
I think something that I've been doing myself, kind of like as I learned how I respond to the acute stressors in the emergency department, is just kind of that mindfulness and that like deep breathing or the tactical breathing. I've been now as a senior resident leading interns through that, meaning, you know, we'll come up with our airway plan, we'll get everything set up, and then pause and like take a breath, relax, and just, this is where we're at. Nothing else is in our heads. This is just it. And I think that's something that like no resources, like you said, 20 seconds of time, not even. And that little bit can, like we talked about, affect like physiologic responses and allow you to have better performance in that and feel a lot more successful kind of in your ability to manage yourself. I think we struggle with getting conference time, probably like most programs. There's a lot of material to cover overall in conference. And so getting extra time to cover wellness is difficult. And then getting that buy-in from residents who I'd rather do wellness or spend time outside of conference instead of hear about how I should do wellness activities. And so those are some of the barriers that we run into. But I think the little things that you can do on shift, those are huge.
Those are all really good outlooks. I'm a huge fan of the Kaizen effect. Have you guys heard of it at all? So it's pretty neat. I didn't make it up. It's this Japanese theory that actually spread around in the US, I believe during World War II. The theory is basically, what are the small changes that you can make? Just very, very small, minor changes that you can make, which cumulatively have a pretty profound effect. And it was actually put into play in industry, in manufacture and industry in the United States during, I'm pretty sure, World War II. And Gina, what you're talking about, you know, it's fantastic because it is simple, right? They're easy, small things that you can do that have such a profound cumulative effect. So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you. What I was going to say earlier is that, ironically, I think the publication, while I felt that, you know, we didn't have enough runs on the board to actually write it up, the publication has actually boosted our momentum to some extent. So I think one of the other tips is to not expect that there's going to be a revolution in your department overnight or over a week or a month or even a year. And this is very much an organic process. It's constantly evolving. And I think it's important to allow it to be a slow burn so that people can be comfortable with it. And the practices, you know, the breathing or the tactical breathing, completely non-confrontational. I kind of liken our pace of the program to a lifestyle change versus a fad diet. This is not about drinking some milkshakes for a little while. This is about just eating healthy, exercising, and looking after yourself. And I'd like to think that taking this approach makes it more sustainable and also gives it longevity.
Thank you for all of the information that you provided with us. Thank you for sharing your program with us. I'm actually switching institutions. And so as I'm hearing some of these things that you're talking about, it's building all of the ideas in my brain on what I would like to do where I go. So out of respect for everyone's busy lives, unless there's anything further that anyone else wanted to discuss, ready to adjourn? I don't know how one ends these things. I'm a rookie.
I was perhaps just going to make a statement that this is incredibly well moderated, AK, because the comments, the comments that Adrian and Alicia both made, you know, in the context of those practices, brings us full circle to how we kind of started off in terms of leadership. And I think it underlines how each of you is actually exerting your leadership, whether overtly or subtly, within your workplaces. And I strongly encourage you to continue to do that.
Listen to that. Shahina is like a big deal. She just gave you props on a podcast about what you're going to do at your institutions. The pressure is not on. Just take a deep breath.
Thank you so much.
And with that, I would love to thank Shahina so much. The information you provided was outstanding. I am so excited to hear more about it. I'm actually really excited to meet you because I've heard about you for over a year now. And I feel this is pretty cool. I'm like chatting with you and you're in Australia and I'm in Philly. I wanted to thank Adrian and Alicia. Being in residency is not easy. You don't have a lot of free time, and I took up 40 minutes of it. So thank you very much for coming on as well.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Thanks, AK, and thanks, Alium.
And that wraps up a great episode from the Wellness Think Tank. Special thanks to our exclusive sponsors, US Acute Care Solutions. You can reach us also on Twitter at WellnessTT. Until next time, remember that residency training should be about thriving and not just surviving.